con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Welcome to the Games Gone podcast. This week, absolutely thrilled to say my guest is the former Coventry defender, Dave Buist. Dave, welcome. Thanks for talking to us.
Cheers, Tom.
It's always good to talk to you. Now, before we get on to playing for Coventry, tell us about your team, because you came into the game late, didn't you?
Yeah, I was 24 years old when I signed for Coventry.
That is late.
Very late, yeah. Actually, I thought all my opportunities of being professional had gone, and the way I'd come up through football, junior football, no academies or anything, I didn't really think that I would go on and make it, you know, to be a professional. The closest I got to was that, obviously, it was the old schoolboy forms then, but I played for juniors Sunday side called Dunlop Terriers, and they had a connection with Villa, so we played in Villa kit. We went round in the Villa minibus, and we were a really good junior football side, you know, under 14s and 16s. We won everything, and we had players from all over. Again, which you can see why they were fed into various professional clubs. And for some reason, we went from being representing Villa unofficially to representing Leicester. And nine of the team that I was playing for signed for Leicester City at under 16, and I didn't.
I remember the team, Dunlop Terriers. They're quite a famous youth team around these parts.
Yeah, they were. I think, looking back now, they obviously used to go and poach what they thought were the best players around and got them all to play. And we're from all over the Midlands, and you know, we used to train at Broadway School just in Aston.
Yeah.
And as I say, we played in the Villa kit and everything like that. So it was good.
Who else was in the team with you?
The only player that actually went on to make it was Simon Morgan, who was at Fulham, and he's worked for the Premier League now. So,
But nevertheless, you know, we all have dreams as a youngster, and you got closer than most, and almost it's like it ain't going to happen for me. And you're 24, and to be fair, at 24, it has passed you by generally.
Yeah, I mean, I'd resign myself that it wasn't. I'd had a trial with John Barnwell, had invited me to Warsaw when I was 22, and I played alongside Dean Smith, and he was only obviously a youngster, and I scored. We played at Willenhall. Can't remember who we played, but we won.
Deuce Lane, Willenhall.
Yeah, that's the one. And then we had a game at the Bescot, again played alongside Dean, and then got invited for a 2-week trial, but heard nothing from it. And I thought that was my last chance saloon, and I was concentrating on work and playing for Moore Green.
And Moore Green, of course, then, they were quite a well-known and well-run and a respected club.
Yeah, I mean, the manager, Bob Faulkner, you know.
Great lad, Bobby Faulkner.
Yeah.
Who was with him then? Was it Andy Dwyer or Dougie Griffiths?
So Dougie Griffiths was after me. Yeah. Andy Dwyer was there, and Ray Monnington was assistant. John Mewis was also there for a bit. But with my non-league playing career, I was at King's Heath, but with all these teams I played in non-league, I never ever got to be the best at that level. So I was playing Works football.
Yeah.
I remember playing against St Andrews in the Works League. So I played for Britannic Assurance, where I worked. Yeah.
Your old man was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Big cricket man.
Yeah. Started off in the second team, got to the first team, and then I went to Solihull Borough, as they were then, in their reserves. Went to King's Heath. They've sort of promised me more of a journey into the first team.
Spent so King's Heath Amateurs?
I'm not sure if they were. Always famous with the in the reserve team at King's Heath. There was three bachelors who I knew very well: William Batchelor, Norman Batchelor, and Keith Batchelor.
Willie was a good player. Went on to Tamworth. Played very well.
Yeah, Tamworth, and when Barry had. Yeah. They had a bit of money and were getting players. They were in the European Cup. Yeah. So me and Willie were centre-halves together, so I had a lot of time. And
I have to say, Willie's mad. He's crackers.
He was the quiet one. But yeah, I mean, he was 6'6", and he could get about. And we had a good side, and we both played against Moore Green in a Birmingham Senior Cup. And we drew at our place, and then we lost at their place. But on the back of that, Bob Faulkner signed me and got me to sign. For that, and then I'd only just got in the Kingsley's first team then. Yeah. And then we played Moore Green, and they moved me to there, and when I went, was having the trials at Coventry, they, again, I just sustained myself the season before. We've been a regular, so then, you know, been to Coventry as well.
So here we are, you think it's bypassed you, and then all of a sudden Coventry are on the, how did that happen?
We were playing played Stourbridge because Barry Powell was the link, and John Bettles, who was a good scout for non-league players, and so Barry would come had come from in the last of his non-league days after playing professionally, and he obviously knew a couple of people was working at the club as well, and he got Terry Butcher, unbeknownst to me, but he got Terry Butcher to come and watch a reserve game. Said we got this. Obviously, I wasn't young. We got this centre half. Come down and have a look. So he came down and we played Stourbridge. I scored, but didn't have a great game. And he invited me for a week's trial. So in the November, went down for a week's trial. The likes of Paul Furlong, you know, getting, there was a lot of non-league, like Sean Flynn, Andy Pearce, all from Hal's Owen, and Tim Clark. And and seeing those guys in there, I thought, you know, we've got a chance here. There's obviously a club that want to, you know, see non-league players and bring them forward. So went for, did a week. Then we played in the reserve game at Old Trafford, and it was Lee Sharp's comeback game. And 15,000 fans in there. There was 9 internationals on the reserve team sheet, and we drew 1-1. Flynn had got a penalty for us. And I'd brought down Danny Wallace, I think it was, and for a penalty, which they missed. So we had a good game down there, and then it was just trying to sort out a deal. It got a bit quiet. Obviously, things with Terry weren't so going so well, which I was unbeknownst to me. But at Christmas, they said, "Right, come in. We've got a deal for you." And then just after Christmas period, just about to go in with my dad, and then come on the news, teletext then.
Yeah, teletext.
Terry Butcher's got the sack, and like the whole world fell apart. And it was like, what the hell? What goes on here now? And then I was ringing John Bettles, who was the thingy, and he said, I'll make some phone calls, we'll see what we can do. And to be fair, Don Howard had been involved in all of this process of me training, watching me play and things like that. And he was like, not a problem. We'll honour we hadn't had a deal, but we spoke about a deal, a 2.5-year deal. And then I went and signed in the new year.
Well, and I mean, nothing's ever been easy for you, has it, in terms of signing? But I suppose that means you enjoy it more when it happens, doesn't it?
I think it is. I mean, the key thing for me was, with me playing for Moore Green and working in insurance, the contract they offered me was less money than I was getting. Obviously, there was player appearances and winning bonuses, but at the time...
The basic was lower.
It was lower, yeah, but it was just that chance. It'd always been sort of, you know, hinted at, and the fact that somebody was going to pay me to play football full time was just, you know, what sort of dreams are made of. So, you know, it was just a quick conversation. My dad got us another year, because initially they were only offering me 1.5 years, and I needed a little bit more security, and he got them up to 2.5 years. And
good old John, he's a great negotiator, John.
Yeah, you know, that's what you want from your parent, reminding you. You know, I'm ready just to say, oh yeah, I'll sign for a week. And and he's going, no, let's have a chat with it. And I wasn't on contract at Moore Green, so the conversation that we're going backwards and forwards while I was sat in Don Howard's office, were trying to with Bob. Anyone knows Bob was tight as anything, and there was conversation between the chairman, Bob, trying to negotiate some sort of fee, and I think they agreed on £5,000 and a bag of balls and a friendly in the summer.
To be fair, though, just a quick word there. Bobby Faulkner, renowned non-league man. I mean, just a phenomenal guy.
The players that he brought through, and the way he was at first, you used to think, God, he had a way with you, which he thought, does he really want me?
Does he want to speak to me?
It was exactly that, and the way he treats you, the way he talks you. But as you got to know that over the, I was there 4 years, and then you just embrace it, and you just, and he's got a unique way of dealing. But and people like it, you know. I still see people like Dave Fearon and Paul Aldridge, who were very much part of that, you know, the successful years with Moore Green, of when we got promoted and stuff like that. And it, just the way he was brilliant. And anyone who stays in non-league for 25 years plus, they know what they're doing.
Absolutely. And so there you are, you're at Coventry. You're probably the oldest youth team player they've got, I suppose. But how tough was that? You're at a club where all the people you're with have come through their youth system and you haven't. So how tough was that?
So the first 6 months, I was way off fitness-wise, and I thought I was fit playing non-league. And it took me 6 months just to get used to the
tempo,
just training every day, and then playing. But obviously, I wasn't anywhere near the first team, but you know, you're gearing up for that Saturday. So in the reserves was a week behind, midweek behind. So you would gear up week to week to play your reserve match on a Wednesday, and then you would train. And if you wasn't in the first team squad, which I wasn't for the first 6 months, first 12 months actually, it's that fitness side. So it took me 6 months just to get up to the pace of what being a professional footballer, what it entailed. And as you just said, the youngsters, it's inbred, it's what they've always done, it's what they've come through to them. But I had a real good affinity with a lot of the young players, because I was in the reserves most of the time with them, and it was the old youth team, reserve team, playing in the Pontins League. And ended up captaining the reserve team, which is not a good sign, because that means you're going to be in there for quite a while. Harry Roberts was the coach there, and he was good fun.
Who came to Birmingham, of course, Brian. He's a top man, funny man.
Yeah, very funny. So his first coaching role, I think, full-time, was after Blues and everything. And he just had that sense of humour, and it was like he was still a player, almost. And so the youth team and the reserves were all together. But, yeah, with the young lads, it was... I think it was a little bit of grounding for them as well, because, you know, they were going to have disappointments. People were going to be injured. And I was always saying to them, look, you know, what are you going to do afterwards? I was a big pusher of the PFA and get in touch with them, and you can do some training, that sort of thing. So I had that sort of sensible head as being, you know, someone who's...
Because you'd worked for a living.
Yeah. I know what it was like in the real world as such, outside the professional bubble.
Who was in that Coventry team when you joined? I remember they had one or two still from the 87 FA Cup winning team, didn't they? Mickey Jim would have been there, wouldn't he?
So Brian Burrows, who didn't play in the final. Steve Grzovic was in goal. Ginny was very much a player for that first year. That was about it. It was obviously Sean Flynn and Andy Pearce, who'd come from our league. They had established themselves in the first team. Peter Atherton, Pete Billing, Robert Rosario was up front. Nuddy.
Robert Rosario, decent.
Peter Unlove was just coming from...
He was a good player, Peter.
Yeah, they picked him up from a trip to Zimbabwe, playing for Bulawayo, I think it was. And he was just getting into the first team and was on there. So it was a bit of a developing young Lee Hurst. It was a great, great young player. Unfortunately, had a knee injury and that finished his...
Sean Flynn, was he as mad here as he was later clubs he was at? Because I remember, he went to West Brom.
Yeah.
And if he'd been a bad pass... He just dropped down into 10 press-ups.
Yeah, that's it. He's done that wherever he's gone, even non-league. So I'd actually played against him for Hell's Own before we both... He signed in the October, I signed in the January, and we played against each other in the for Hell's Own Town. And he was one of my best mates, and still is. He's obviously living down southwest now. But he is mad. And I don't know what he's underneath. It's the black countryside of him, but it was like a... They say about, you know, a box of frogs. That was just Flinny all over the shop.
Do you remember your debut?
Yes, I do. Very, very vividly. And it was thanks to Bobby Gould. It's 12 months more or less to the day of when I signed professionally. We played a reserve game on the Monday night, I think it was. Because I don't know why it was the Monday, but the first team were playing Wednesday. And they were going on a double header. So they'd... drew with Norwich at Highfield Road on the Saturday in the FA Cup, and we were having the replay on the Wednesday, and then they were playing them in the league on the Wednesday, on the Saturday after. So anyway, I've had an absolute torrid time in the reserves on the Monday night. We got absolutely hammered. Phil Neal and Bobby had just absolutely gone into us. We know Harry Roberts, and that was it. Heads down, get on with it. And then I'm looking round, and Pete Billing, I don't know if you remember him, an experienced centre-half, had gone down, played the whole game, but no injury whatsoever. All of a sudden, his calves, and he's got some ice on it. I'm thinking, that's come from nowhere. And then Phil Neal comes in and goes, right, we need someone to travel with the first team to Norwich. And then it clicked. Pete obviously didn't want to go down on the 4-day trip.
Yeah.
Got a little calf strain, and then it was cool. Next one along, the only other centre-half that could go down as a bit of cover was myself. So it was by default that I went down, and thanks to Pete Billing having a calf, presumed calf injury. So we lost in the in the replay 1-0, but I was on the bench and I came on for Lloyd McGrath in the 92nd minute, something like that. So literally on the pitch a minute, but that was my debut. And then on the Saturday, Bobby had told me on the Friday that I was going to play. So then it was all the phone calls to family. Look, well, I didn't say get yourself down here. As soon as I said I was playing, they were in the hordes on making the way down. But I was rooming with Andy Pearce. So Andy Pearce had been obviously dropped, but hadn't been told. I'd come back with a great big smile on my face, thinking, "What? How do I say that I'm playing?" And basically, it means he's not. Yeah. So, and he was brilliant. To be fair to me, he was. He understood. We were rooming together, so obviously we were good mates anyway. So it was nice. And then I made my debut, and we drew 1-1. And then I remember being in the Red Lion in Kingsleith on the night, and Match of the Day came on, and there it was.
I mean, for us wannabe footballers, you know, that feeling of walking out at that level, I mean, what was it like?
Oh, it was... I just remember, I mean, my mom, as we pulled into Carrow Road, got off the coach from staying over... My dad and my sister were there, and they've recalled now that I just looked as white as a ghost. You know, I'm thinking I'm nervous. I mean, I used to get nervous before all games, and it was a good sign for me because it was sort of got the adrenaline going and things like that. But it was just one of them. Goes right, it's you get on with it, you go through all the routines. It's what you've been planning for.
This is your chance.
Yeah, this is your chance. Yeah, and. You know, playing against Norwich, I can't remember who was up front. It might have been Chris Sutton, actually. It was Chris Sutton.
Good luck.
Yeah. But we drew 1-1. He didn't score. And you just look back through through teams. So obviously, that period of time, Norwich were actually having a good run in the UEFA Cup, I think it was. Right, yeah. I always remember Jeremy Gossett might have been. They were quite a good footballing. Dave Phillips was playing for me, used to play for Cov. But you just get on with your own game. I was a bang average centre half. I headed the ball. I tackled the ball. I was quite quick for my size, and I gave it to the people who could play.
Which, by the way, is not a bad way to be. Big Ron always told his centre halves, win the ball and give it to those that can play. That was Big Ron's philosophy, and there's not a lot wrong with it, is there?
No, there's not. And you know, obviously the game's changed and evolved, and that. But you play to your strengths of your team, and you know, particularly Big Ron. He wanted you to defend, and you know,
clean sheet.
You don't lose the game, and you know, I respected that. And we, you know, played against many centre halves. I played alongside many centre halves, and I was one that I'll do exactly what you tell me. That's what you get. Honest.
You'd come in late. Yeah. You hadn't. You come into the game late. So whatever the manager wanted, you did.
Yeah, and I respected, you know, each of the managers that did that.
Who was your favourite manager?
Big Ron, because of what he bought to the players, because he really looked after the players. Absolutely hammered me and Paul Williams used to get abuse of him, but in a way to...
He could do it in a funny way, Ron.
Yeah, in a way to get more out of us. Yeah. And I liked that sort of relationship, and obviously Kevin Richardson had come from Villa, and he was a bit of a, you know, it would go in between, like Rico, Gaffer would have a go at us, and then Rico would just come and just like, he's trying to get a bit more, you know, and he was that go-between, and it was good. But him and Strachan together actually were very, very, very good.
Was Gordon still the best player at the club?
that was the problem with Gordon. He came inside, he was playing the games, he was fitter than anybody else, and annoying, really, because...
Everyone said to me, because he didn't come to play, he came to coach,
yeah.
And he was that good, he said, you're going to have to play.
Yeah, and he, you know, he was in that usual period of time, we needed to stay up, and, you know, he was pivotal in Strat, wasn't he? And he got everyone else going, and that's why I think the two of them were good. So he had the seriousness of Gordon, of what he wanted, what he'd bought, what type of player he was, to and where he was going with his career coaching and seeing it on. And then you had Ron, who was very much your player. He wanted the players to go out, he wanted them to socialise, he liked that team spirit and building from there. So that's why I think the two of them worked very well together.
In those games, any special games, you know, that you've played in that you thought, well, what a game that was?
You always think of the game, so going back to the season before that, when Bobby left and Phil took over. Because I hadn't played at the end of getting in, after getting to the team after being there a year, I played about 12 games maybe towards the end of the season, and then I had a whole season where I didn't play. And then, obviously, Bobby left.
How tough is that when you've been in the team and you want a bit more, don't you? Yeah. How tough is that?
It's really hard, if I'm honest. And, you know, Bob had obviously not seen something in me that he wanted. Andy Pearce had gone. Phil Babb had been bought as a left-back and then transferred him brilliantly into a centre-half. So chances were just limited. And, obviously, Bobby resigned. Phil stepped in for the rest of that season and didn't pick me. I wasn't on the bench or anything, so it was just nowhere near it. And that I was out of contract at the end of that season. So I'm then going right. I'm training to move away.
Yeah.
And I was on a week to week, and the best thing that happened was they started selling all their centre halves. So Peter Atherton left, Phil Babb went to Liverpool, and then coming up towards the start of the season, he didn't have a centre half, and he was on the. It was clear that I was the only one that they had, and they couldn't sign anyone. So the week before, and I started playing. Me and my dad had joking here at Wimbledon had been in touch, and we went and met him down, but nothing came of it. And then the week before, so we're starting on the Saturday, Tuesday before, Phil Neal rings the house, speaks to my wife. I was not in. And he said something like, "Oh, where is he? Is he talking to other clubs?" And she didn't have a clue, and just went, "No, he's not in. I'm sorry." He goes, "Well, get him to ring me in the morning when he comes in." So the next morning, from that conversation, I thought, "Why is he ringing me?" So then he went, "You were meeting another club, weren't you?" I said, "Yeah, I was," and I wasn't. I'd already met him the week before, but I wanted to make him sort of put.
Yeah.
Strengthen my position.
Yeah,
and he goes, "Well," we need you to sign. I said, "Well, you know, you need to put a contract on it." He goes, "Well, what do you want?" I said, "Well, Wimbledon are offering me this, this, and this." And I said, "If you can match it, I'll stay, and then I'll sign." And then that was it. He just went, "Right, just get down here in the morning. We'll sort the paperwork out." And then I signed a 2-year contract. And then I played 25 games on the bounce. Then and then I had a double hernia. After Christmas, yeah. So I'd had a real good run in the team, and I was probably playing the best football of my career then. And then I had a double hernia, but it wasn't diagnosed at the same time. It was one after the other, so I missed the next 6 months. That's when Ron came in, round about February, March of that season. I'll never forget meeting Ron for the first time. He goes, walking down the corridor at Wrighton, and walks past me. He goes, "Beauty, isn't it?" I went, yes, Gaffer. Goes, "You're no good to me while you're injured." carried on walking. "Okay, cheers, Ron. I'll do what I can." You know, and it was just so bizarre. But you could just tell what he wanted from us. And I was just coming, obviously, recovering fitness-wise of that season. That was 95, 96. So I was in and around the first team. I was, you know, we went to, I remember going to Ireland. I played a couple of games, but then when you've been out for so long, I'd got suffered with my Achilles because other little things come along. But I played a few games, you know, under Ron, and then was in and around the team, and then just up to Christmas again. It's all about certain situations that occur to allow you to do well. So I'll never forget, we played Wimbledon. We had two men sent off. We came back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 or something like that. But the best thing for me was, two of the lads that got sent to half, who got sent off, were the two centre halves.
Oh.
I think it was Richard Shaw and David Rennie. So they were suspended for the next game. We were playing the Blackburn Rovers, who I think were champions the previous season. And there was me and, is it David White?
Yeah. No, Chris White.
Chris White, sorry. Chris White had come on loan from Birmingham, not played a single game, and because the centre-halves were injured, me and him never played together. Playing in the reserves, we're playing against Alan Shearer and Chris Sutton, and we absolutely battered them, Tom. It was a frosty pitch, they didn't quite fancy it. I scored the first goal, backheader from Peter Unlove, and then I you know, dived in bravely at the near post, and we beat them 5-0, I think it was. And that was, and things like that just changed. So Ron, I think, saw a thing in me then that, you know, that he wanted. He saw the value of it. Of honesty, you're talking about. He wanted his defenders
That's
to defend.
How he wants
yeah.
It's interesting though that you say you weren't playing your best, you weren't at your best, and you were thinking about moving away. And then all of a sudden, they want you to sign, and then you played your best football. Is there a something connected there? The fact that they wanted you improved your game.
I think it is. It's like, and we all want to be wanted, Tom, no matter what we do, and it's appreciated. But you know, it was a big change because you know with Phil and his background of you know being at Liverpool and that, you had tremendous,
the most decorated player, I think, apart from Giggs.
And I was there when one of the Sheffield United players turned around to him and said to him, "What have you ever won?" And then, as you said it, you realise you've said that to the wrong guy. And he goes, "I've won 17 championship medals, 4 European Cups, 4 and he's just
forget it.
It might be Kevin Gange actually. Yeah. That was
good one.
You know, we drew at Sheffield United, coming off the pitch, there was a bit of words going on, and he went, "What have you ever?" I shouldn't have said that.
I know Kevin, he was at Villa, of course. Yeah, great.
Yeah. So, I had a lot of respect for Phil. And I think it just comes with getting that opportunity, and that's where the man management, so probably where Phil lacked a little bit of the man management or didn't think it was quite there. Yeah. New to management as well, you know, with the team. Ron had already seen all that, and Ron knew which players to. One who needed to kick up the backside. One who, some of Ron's training methods were fine. And I'll forget.
Did he join in the five-a-sides?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Did he want to be Bonoff?
He was Del Piero, because it was whoever he was commentating in the Champions
League. He wanted to be.
That was who he was, and you knew that you had to go on a equivalent to a decent run after the five-a-side. And if Ron was in your team, you knew you'd be doing that run because he'd just be standing up there. Pendo would be on the same team, so you're already two players down, you know, in a 5-6 aside, because you got, no disrespect, so you got two players who can't really play anymore.
But that won't get back.
No, I'll tell him myself. But I'll never forget, we had a frosty ice pitch, and he had us recovering sliding tackles on the ice. And so they'd play a ball down the side, we'd have to slide as if we were tackling them, then get up and then channel the balls. Honestly, our legs were red raw afterwards. But you did it. The other one was, not too long after I did my hernia, he thought I needed to be fitter. I'd coming back from a double hernia, and he had me doing stretching, diving headers. And this was after training, and it was just little things like that. But I think it was his way of going, right, I want more from you. I want, you can do it. Let's get together. And I loved him. I'd never have a bad word.
Larger than life, though. Yeah. Larger than
and he protected the players. You know, we talk about man management. He protected us away from that. So, you know, on the interviews and everything, he would protect us. Behind closed doors, he would hammer us.
Oh, yeah.
And quite rightly so. But he would protect us in the public.
And that's good. And, you know, things are looking good. You know, your career's blossoming. Even though it's late, your career's blossoming. 50 games, 4 goals. For a centre-half, that's decent return. And then you can't help but bring it up. April the 8th, you know.
Well, the whole weekend was a good and bad, because we're always down the bottom third, and you know when I'm talking back now, I don't realise how whether we were in the bottom 2, 3, 4, or we were always tinkering down that end of the table, and we played Liverpool on the Saturday at Highfield Road, and we beat them. Noel Willian had scored not quite an overhead kick, but it was going over and he really stretched for it and pulled it back, and it was a great finish. We won 1-0, so that took us into Man United at Old Trafford.
Big games.
Yeah. But I'm saying it now, and I'm realising as I'm saying it to you, God, they're massive games there. I'm thinking, but you're just in that zone. It's your job, you've got to prepare, you know, and that's what you wanted. But the obviously, the Man United thing was where I had my sort of first trial game. And then now I was going back to Old Trafford, you know, playing the first team, and was going to be up against, you know, Cantona was up front that day. It just, but the fact that it happened so quick after Liverpool, so it was Liverpool recovery on the Sunday, and then we're travelling down for the bank holiday. And that's what you want, you know, Old Trafford away, all the full of the, or the crowd. There was only about 4,000 Cobb fans in there. The rest were, you know, Man United down that day. I don't even know the end. Is it the Stretford End? Yeah, and you come out from your warm from the dressing room to do your warm up, and you hear the noise, and you just make a beeline to that bottom left hand corner because you come out at the top, and that's where your fans were. So you went and warmed up where your fans were. You know, a little bit of solace.
But it is a place where you have to be mentally strong.
again, I just take it for granted that I think players are mentally strong. I think there's I think there's resilience in players that for you to go and be in that minute percentage that go and make it professionally
at the top level.
At the top level, you have to have some sort of different way of thinking or desire, or especially the way I came up with many knockbacks and not getting there. And I was like, quite often I used to say, if you wait till all this is over, you'll be thinking, why hadn't I done X, Y, Z, if that was what was keeping you back. So I think players are resilient and they've got that determination and resilience.
Desire is a great word.
Yeah. To do that. And, you always have examples of players that always think, you wouldn't fancy going into war, as they say, with them. But, you have your players for that, and then you've got your glossy ones that your game changers, and that's what makes a good balance of a team. So that whole weekend was absolutely was geared up to be great, not for the reasons it was.
Did you get a buzz out of walking out at Old Trafford though? I mean, aside from being professional, is there a little bit of it's Man U, it's Old Trafford? Did you?
I think you want to try and pretend you're not.
It's just another game.
Yeah. And when you're in the away tour, we used to like the away games anyway, because it sort of took the pressure off the fact that normally it would be however many thousand home fans, and it was whereas when you're away from home, there's like less pressure.
Yeah.
Because the away fans, and you don't know them, and you just block them out. And that's what you try to do. But at Man United, the roar that you come out to them was fine, and it's so enclosing around you. And then you come out that top end of the tunnel, and so all you hear is you can't even see your fans until you come down, and that's quite. It's not intimidating. Intimidating infers that you're not up for it, but it's hostile. They're trying to be intimidating so that you just get
a lift.
Just go, right, this is it. This is what football's all about.
And then it was only 6 minutes old, wasn't it? When
87 seconds. I was on the pitch.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow. What do you remember of it? Not that you want to remember, but you.
No, I remember it quite vividly. Obviously, it was well.
Was it Dennis Irwin?
Well documented in all papers. So I'm constantly see pictures, videos, all stuff like that, which just makes sure it confirms what you might have heard. So we always had a corner, and for us to get a corner from the after that short period of time, you've done well. We're on top of the game, they're on the back foot. It was after about a minute. It was corner number two. Ali Pickering took it. Noel William would go for the near post for a flick on, and then me and a couple of the other centre-halves were coming at the far stick. Ball bounced in the 6-yard area after the flick on from Noel. Perfect. Came in. I just remember going to stab at it, but didn't remember anything else that happened. Knowing what I know now and afterwards, that as I went to stab the ball, Schmeichel saved it. Dennis Irwin came off the post and blocked me just in the middle of my shin, and Brian McClair came the other side, all going for the ball at the same time. So if you're any good at physics, you've got two opposable forces coming together and there's nowhere.
There's one outcome.
To go. Yeah, it's the leg's going to go, and it just split L-shaped, and then it just that's when I'd be lying if I said I was thinking this and that. I'm just presuming I went into looking at the pictures that I saw. I just froze, and I always remember Dion Dublin on his sort of going into like a squat on his haunches, his hands were on his head, and the look on his face was, and it was, it just reminded me. But the worst thing is, it's like, don't move. People come on, they'll hurt. And I didn't know that. I knew something wasn't right. I knew something was missing and wasn't in the right place. Going off the pitch. And the worst thing is, out of Old Trafford, there's the speed bumps. And when I was on the ambulance, and there were massive speed bumps, so every time it went up, ju-jung, that was my leg.
And
was
you
going
with
up
a broken leg.
Yeah, and not just any normal broken leg.
It wasn't just a break or a fracture. This was just totally broke.
It's what's called a compound fracture. It comes out of the skin. It was a spiral fracture. It was just, it was a combination of about five different breaks that was all in there, the worst you can have. But you get to the hospital, and they say, right, and they're taking the sock off, they're taking the boot off. These are all, they can't put me out at this stage. And
so you're going through pain when they're just doing that?
Yeah, they give you the gas and air, which is you know, wasn't really helping too much. It's just a diversion, really. But just before I was going to go under, and I was waiting to go under, and they had to wait a little bit longer because I'd had a pre-match meal. And
oh, of course.
Yeah, so we'd have to wait. And next thing you know, you see one of the porters come running down the thing going, yes, like this. And I went, stupidly, I went, what's happened? He goes, yeah, we've just scored. And Man United, obviously, just they won the game 1-0 after the 10-minute break, and he was running down celebrating. I thought, oh, that's
thank you very much indeed. That's helped my recovery.
Yeah, yeah. I'm off now.
But I remember front page of the, I think it was the Mirror, and I couldn't look at it. I mean, nothing to do with me, but I couldn't look at it. I mean, you didn't then, but do you realise just how bad that was?
I mean, I never did, and for 6 months I didn't look at any pictures. My mum and dad, they kept all that. I didn't want to look.
No.
And accidentally I saw a picture, so like towards the end of my recovery, because I was in hospital for 6 weeks, and I'd had 14 operations in those 6 weeks. I'd had 10 operations in the first 12 days.
So why so many operations?
Because what happened was it was an open fracture, and I caught MRSA in the hospital.
Now, to add to the problem.
Yeah, so MRSA, and I'd also had they call it a hematoma of the muscle, which goes down the outside, just like when you get a deadly. Yeah. And they'd had to release the pressure by slicing it all down. And you've seen my leg, you'll see the scar that goes all the way down. That's from that. And that's ultimately what stopped me. Playing. So to do all those operations were to clean the wound and try and get it to heal, because it wasn't healing
because of MRSA.
Because of the MRSA, which is stops anything healing. And I needed a blood supply down there. And one of the most shocking things that I was ever told, and you know, this is going, you know, regards playing football again and coming back, it completely went out the window when I heard this. They were saying, look, if this doesn't start to heal, it's coming off below below the knee. And I remember seeing the chaplain came up just to have a chat, and I was due down to go have this big operation. They were taking a muscle out of my back, put it into my calf to create a blood supply to try and help the healing. And they said, look, if this doesn't happen, there's only one other way to do this. And then you'll either wake up so this is what I'm going down with, you'll either wake up in intensive care with everyone around you, or you'll be back in your bed when we just don't know. So I had an epidural in my back as well,
what did that do to you? Having that sort of message,
you're just trying to make sure. At that time, like say football went out the window, you're trying to make sure that you know that I was keeping the limb. You're thinking about, will I walk again properly? Will I be able to run again?
Forget football.
Not for football, just
walking.
Just general life, just be able to deal with that. And, we had a bit of luck was on our side, because when I came round from that operation, I remember waking up in the bed and I thought, well, I can't see anyone. I can't see anything. I thought, what's going on here? And then, I looked down and I thought, well, there's nothing. And then, obviously, the doctors come in and they went, oh, it started to heal. It showed signs of recovery, so we left it, and that was just brilliant then. And then it just went on and on. But we're going back to the picture of seeing that. I used to go out. My mum, she stayed down in the hotel and used to come in and see me every day. And I went into the hotel where she was staying, and they had some newspapers on the thing, and I glimpsed at it and saw it, and it just made me go, oh God, what's it? I had a real horrible feeling when I saw it, so I could understand. And the amount of letters and good luck and things like that, and it'd been on. Obviously, I remember Gary Lineker was interviewing me, you know, from the bedside on on Football Focus, and you're trying to be upbeat and brave and things like that, but all those operations.
Turmoil, aren't you?
You're tired. And that resilient side of me is there going, right, don't worry, stop worrying about me, I'm fine, I'll get on and get through this.
At the end of the day, it stopped you playing at the highest level. But you was there a time when you thought, I'm going to get back from this? Was there ever that time, or was it always, he says, not going to happen?
Yeah, I was told something by the doctors After about 3 months, and I didn't tell anyone else. And I was going back for 6 months for them to sort of confirm what I already knew, because I basically had this drop foot, which is all the tendons being cut away.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sort of knew, if I can't pull my toes up, and how can I put a boot on? How can I play professional football? Yeah. So I sort of already knew. And when he told me, it wasn't a case of, you know, breakdown, crying and all that. Like, it was
confirmation.
I already knew, and it was my conversation with him was, what can we do? What's the best I can get it back to be able to, you know, run around? Can I play football again at any level? Things like that. And they put me in touch with a specialist in Liverpool, funnily enough. And what they did was they did an operation where it was called a tendon transfer, and they basically pulled my tendon of my big toe as tight as they could, so my foot came up. So it stayed in that position, so I could push it down, but it would automatically, sort of like a spring, come back. And that was the best operation I had, and that worked, and it still works
to this day.
Yeah. So,
but you know, I think I read somewhere over 22 operations in total, which, I mean, it's phenomenal, really, isn't it? For your body to go through that, you know.
It was, and that was over a sort of two and a half year period from the injury, and you know, a lot of the it wouldn't heal. That wouldn't heal for a long time, and I had a hole in my shin for a long time. So again, a lot of the operations were clean outs. And I had a couple of on my Achilles because of a year of the way I was walking, because of the injury, I was putting a lot of weight on through my left, and I had an Achilles.
Exactly, yeah.
I had a hole in my Achilles which had to be repaired, and so a lot of it was subsequent, what they call secondary, because of what had happened in the first place.
So how do you, and this is the final bit about it, about that particular incident, how did you deal with not playing mentally? I mean, I know you said, well, I was expecting it, but how did you deal with it? Because A, you'd waited so long for your chance. B, you'd got your chance. Within that chance, you had a year where they didn't pick you. Then you made your debut, and then, you know, 50 games later, it's all over. I mean, that's a lot to deal with.
You know what, Tom? I wouldn't change it for the world, because I'd waited so long till 24 to get into it. You know, and you know, hindsight's a great thing, but to have played in the Premier League at the top level and get paid for playing football and enjoy it and love it, I wouldn't change it, you know, for anything. It was tough, and you might understand this a little bit more than most people, but being around players made it harder, and I saw that. So like, they couldn't do anything. I wasn't under our physios for anything. I was basically up and down to Manchester being dealt with by their medical staff.
But still at the club.
So I'd go in, try to be around it, and slowly you're not part of it. You're not playing. You're not
They're
training.
Getting ready
you're
for not, games
nothing,
and all
nothing
that
Nothing to
sort
talk
of stuff.
About. Yeah, yeah. And I remember just being in there the one day, and I'd just go, you know, usual routine. I'd go in with Paul Williams. He'd pick me up in the morning, go and have a cup of tea.
How good was Willow in that situation?
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. All the lads were, you know, but Paul Williams was there. His wife then was good friends with my wife, and we got kids the same age, and we just gelled, and he was brilliant, and he's still brilliant now. I was speaking to him the other day. Now he's back at Blues. Yeah. So honestly, we would do anything for each other, and that stands now. So, you know, you make good friends in football, and those.
And in time of need, by the way.
Yeah. So he was taking me up and down to. He wanted me to be, if I needed picking up, going anywhere, he'd go, right, I'll be around in 5 minutes.
Wow.
And that's
proper friend.
Yeah, proper. And he'd take me up to Manchester if I was struggling. I couldn't get anyone else to take me. He did that for quite a few times as well. But I knew that I was a reminder for the players as well. So me there, even though it was a freak accident, I was a constant reminder for everyone. Or this is how I envisaged it. I was a constant reminder that your career could be over.
Yeah.
So I made a decision, and I went to the physio. I said, George, I'm not coming in again. I'll come to the match days and things like that. But it's not right for me to be around the changing room and the players. And
is that George Dalton?
George Dalton. Yeah.
Good man.
Yeah. And he just said. He said, look, I understand. And the gaffer was brilliant, because he was, you know, we had a few socials while I was. And he, I'll never forget him coming to my 30th I'm just going off the subject, just reminded me. So it'd come down to me, you'll remember the old Jeffersons on the on the Stratford Road. And we'd landed there on the day of my birthday, which was at St John's Hotel.
Yeah.
2 years after I'd finished. And I'd had an operation, so I can't remember what it was, but I was on the crutches still. And so we went out of a drink in Jefferson's. Went and had a bit of lunch. Ron turns up. Next thing you know, it's 6-7 o'clock, and we haven't gone out of Jefferson's, and I've got a party on the night. Everyone's coming down, and then Ron invites himself to my 30th and appears from behind the big curtains, like you know, announced to the world he's arrived. But yeah, he'd got a driver, obviously.
And, Bobo, probably.
It was Bobo. Yeah. It was Bobo. And it was just you know, typified what Big Ron was about and wanting to call me about. And he used to call me the Raspberry Ripple, you know, and things like affectionate names like that, you know. And,
but it was affectionate, because you can only do that to people you get on with.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it was Ron, you know, politically correct or not, he was brilliant, and he made me feel so at ease. And he's got that personality where you want to be, he's infectious.
You want to be around him.
The stories he's got, and, you know, we were just in stitches. Everything he says, there's a little story to it, and he just crying. Obviously, you got tears because you're crying.
You had a testimonial, and you had Gazza playing in your team.
Yeah, I mean, he was brilliant. I mean, he was. I can't remember if he was trying, because this was 97, so I can't remember whether he was trying to prove his fitness for one of the England games, or whether it was, because that was why he came to play. At the end of the season, he'd been at Rangers, because he came and he gave me a pair of his boots, not the one, I'm 9.5, he was only about a 7, socks, shoes, signed them all, the shirt from Rangers, and I've still got all those. But George Best was there as well at the
game. Best as
well? Yeah, because there was a game beforehand which my brother played in, on the pitch. And George was in the players' bar upstairs.
It's a shock.
So you know, we had a good chat.
What a turnout for you!
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a sellout. It was 23,500. It was the first time ever that a testimonial had been sold out prior to the actual day. So normally it's people turn up, pay on the gate. Yeah. It was sold out. They were queuing outside Highfield Road, around the corner after we'd had to beat Tottenham to stay up the Saturday before, and we beat them 3-1 at Tottenham, and Willow had scored a great goal as well, and it just set it all up for the Friday. Nice. Yeah,
but then, you know, you walk out the door, I know you'd walked out, technically you'd walked out before because you didn't want to be around the place, but you walk out Coventry for the last time and into coaching and management.
Yeah, so you have to look around what you want to do. So my contract finished a year after I got injured. So that year was about all, you know, trying to recover the operations, all that sort of thing. And then the next year, I thought, well, what can I do to before I get back completely fit? So I started doing my coaching qualifications. I did a sports injury course at Coventry, the Solihull College. And that sort of kept me, that was a couple of days a week, and then our academy had just started. So I said to Pendo, I meant to go in Pendo, I said, look, I'm getting into my coaching, I'd just done my C licence, I was doing my B, this was about 97, 98, this was the next season. I said, look, you know, get me in with to run one of the teams, and he did, he got me in. I started looking after the under-11s. Mm-hmm. Then I went into Solihull Borough.
Solihull Borough as well. Yeah, then. Moore Green and Solihull Borough together.
Yeah, well, this was before then, so it was Solihull Borough I was manager of. Moore Green then came to Groundshire.
It wasn't the Moors then, it was Solihull Borough.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So they hadn't joined until a few years after. So I spent 4 seasons there, loved it, you know, getting players in. So like 7 days a week I was either coaching, managing, and at the house.
My old manager, I think, Trevor Stephen, was the chairman there.
Trevor, well, as a 16, 17-year-old, one of the clubs I went to was Solihull Borough, and I played in their reserves, and Trevor was the... And he used to run a Sunday side called Northfield Celtic, something like that. And a lot of the players. We played for the reserve team as well, and Trevor was brilliant, and he's still involved now with the Solihull Moors. These people stick around for years, don't they? And he's great, Trevor.
Then on to Evesham.
Yeah, Evesham. He was. The sort of money had gone out of Solihull Borough as to what they'd been used to.
Well, they were the richest non-league club at once after selling their Lady Lane ground.
Down in that's just the back of the Hillfield pub now, isn't it? When I came in, Paul Dyson was manager with Hop, and Hoppy was assistant, and they let Dyce go, and I was running the youth team then. I'd started an under 18 while I was doing my A licence. Mm-hmm. Through Trevor, and then John Hewitson just said to me, look, can you take the team to the end of the season? And we did all right, and then after the fourth season, I think it was, they reduced the budget, and we just agreed to go different ways. I was still wanting to get a team that was going up rather than a team that was looking to just hold itself. So we parted, went to Evesham, kept them up because they were like bottom, second from bottom, kept them up that season, and then we got promoted through the playoffs the season after, and then they sacked me the season after that, around about the February time after keeping them up, and it was a challenge, but that's what you're dealing with in non-league, Tom. You've got directors who not necessarily know anything about football making decisions and questioning you, and you think, well, you're not going to understand, you'll be swayed by someone from the tea canteen saying I should have picked so and so. So it was people have their opinions, they're paying their money, they decide who it is, and I couldn't get back into non-league that way, so I went back to the academy and took on the under 15s, under 16s.
You did make a bit of a comeback there. You played some games for Highfield, for Highgate.
Yeah, my brother, I didn't want to, my brother was manager with Pete Frayn at Knoll, and I think they had a couple of injuries, but I hadn't been, that was quite a few years afterwards, that was, well, it was around Evesham Solihull, but I had a couple of, I think I played twice for them, only because it was they had an injury or someone else, but that was it. I was never going to play regularly for them.
Regularly, competitively again. So there you are then, you're in the football in the community now. We'll come to that in a minute, but just first of all, your toughest opponent?
I always have two, Tom. Not at the same time. So I always pick Ian Wright and Alan Shearer.
To be fair, that's not bad.
and they're both quite different. Yeah. Obviously, both very good finishers.
For sure.
Different types of players. At that time, this was pre his knee operation, so he was probably one of the best strikers, if not the best striker in the world then, with Alan Shearer.
And physical.
He had everything. Yeah. He had pace, he was good in the air, he was strong, he could hold you off. He was his goal record speaks for itself. And Ian Wright, who had that, he had that non-league bit to him, so he had a little naughty side, and it was a good challenge because excuse me, it was good because he played on players' weaknesses, so we found out who might be up for it, who might not be. And I remember we were in the box and the ball had come between us and it got cleared, and he whacked me while I was on the floor. We were both on the floor, and I just whacked him back. I've never a player to mix it, but if you're going to kick me, I'm going to kick you back.
Kick you back, fair enough.
And it was all almost like a, okay, so that's not going to work today. Let's just get on with the game. But that's not why I chose him as hardest opponent. It's just because of his all-round game. He never gave you a second. He was...
Never stood still, did he?
Yeah, no.
So, the best you've played with?
I'd say Nuddy, because of just his skill, and he was growing into that sort of...
On his day, he was unplayable, wasn't he?
Yeah, and so he was very gifted. Was a bit of an individual, but not in a selfish way, but, it was like that. But the biggest probably influence, it's got to be Dion Dublin, because when we signed him, and Phil Neal, great signing by Phil Neal, signing for $2 million from Man United. And just what he bought as an all-round professional, not just obviously on the pitch, he was awesome, and the goals he scored, but just the what he brought an ethos to us, the way we trained. He changed the way we thought about football, and he brought good habits into the club, and you wanted to be like Dion. He was that sort of he had that inspirational side to him of where we'd come from, and again he'd been non-league and had come up the hard way.
Fantastic. Yeah, because he'd been at Cambridge, hadn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So excellent. Who was the when you that Sky Blue squad over those years? Who was the joker?
Oh, there was a few. John Sulaco was one of the big ones. He was always just messing around. Really, he was like a little child. You know, he just wanted to give him a slap, but he was funny with it. We had a group, so John Williams, the flying postman.
Oh yeah,
local lad. Still see
Cradley Heath then.
Yeah. It was, you know, again, he came under Bobby Gould, and we used to have a group called the F Troop, and there was Steve Morgan, who was the left back. There was John Williams, Sean Flynn. There was the lad with that Andy. Oh, I can't remember now. We bought him from Rangers, but never quite got into the team. With Stephen Presley, funnily enough, and there was just a group with us that just gelled, and you know, we were all sort of in around the first team, if not playing regularly, and it coincided with the time that I was you know heavily involved with the first team.
Who was the manager that got the best out of you?
That's a difficult one, that is. I want to say Ron, but I didn't, because of the timing of me getting injured and being injured when he came. It was only sort of half a season over a full season that I sort of got, but he probably had a way of making me wanting to do better. Obviously, Phil Neal gave me the confidence when he put me in the team, and he made me feel, yeah, you're part of this, we want you. So you know, between the two in a different way. I mean, Phil was absolutely, you know, it was brilliant. He was. It was almost as annoying as Gordon Strachan, because when they alarm bells were you, but when they used to demonstrate and they would just ping a perfect ball, and like we were doing set pieces and the guys couldn't put a corner in, and he'd go, oh, is it that hard? Let me come and show you. And then first time, ping, right, that's exactly, can you not do that? You know, and Strachan was like that.
It was the same at Birmingham when Trevor was there as the manager.
Yeah.
He was the best player.
Yeah, he was. And Gordon was probably annoyingly in a worse way, because Phil was obviously aging, getting on a bit. But fitness-wise, Gordon was quicker, so that whenever you're doing fitness and he's leading it, and you've just got to, you know, he's half a mile in front of you, and he's saying, oh. So it's annoying, but it's great.
We're just coming to the end now, and tell us a question I wanted to ask you, and have wanted to ask you. Why, I mean, you work in the football in the community, and you put a lot into it, and you love it, but why are you not in management and coaching with your experience?
I think it came to after I got the sack from Evesham, and then nothing came about to stay in non-league, and my charity that I was working for was getting bigger and better, so I got to a decision, and it was about security as well, Tom, and it's about people, you know. So there was no one that I grew up with that were getting managers jobs that were coming to me and going, oh, will you come in
as part of the team?
Yeah. You know, will you come in and coach the youngsters or anything like that? Because I did all my coaching badges. And I sort of got to the stage and I went, like, I either go this way or that way. If I go that way, I've got probably less security, and I've still got a young family then. So I just went, right, I went with the academy and with this job I'm doing now, and I've been doing it 25 years now. And that was just what it was right for me at that time. You know, had the opportunity come up, you know, I'm talking from about 2003 to 2008 of going in full-time somewhere, but the opportunity never came, so... but I loved what I did, and...
You get a buzz, don't you, working with the kids?
Yeah, I mean, I don't work with them anymore, because like I say, that's where the job changed, and it went from, you know, managing younger coaches, and it's not just football that we deliver in the foundation.
Because the foundation now delivers education, all sorts of things.
Yeah, and inclusion, health, mental health's massive at the moment.
Massive.
But it's all built around the badge and its supporters, and you're using the badge to entice people in to go, right, actually... Well, we could signpost you to this, and this, but ultimately you're going to be doing something and having the experiences of your local football team and Coventry City, you know,
and giving youngsters a purpose in life.
Yeah, so we do all the football stuff, and I'm classed as the technical director of 25 grassroots teams, but I don't coach anymore. I went into doing the FA tutoring I've been doing that for 7 years. So I coach the coaches, level ones, level twos. It's all changing again now, and you know, the game evolves, the way you coaches coach evolves. But you find out what just little bits. Started playing non-league over 35s football. Started playing, well, yeah, all these years I've been playing for the Blues.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think now, I've probably been doing that for about 15, 16, 17
years. I suppose that gives you, playing for the Blues All-Stars, the charity team, which has raised a lot of money, helped to raise a lot of money for local causes, it gives you that dressing room that perhaps you missed.
Yeah, it definitely does.
There's some lunatics in there, by the way.
And it's been around, and a lot of the players, obviously, you'd been around as well. And
played against,
yeah. And a few you hadn't. So hearing their stories and it keeps you back. And there's a great, you know, when, you know what the dressing room is. I mean, you get the most of it when you're in
there. I'll get all the abuse.
Yeah, you look at Martin. So Martin O'Connor, we both played against each other for Bromsgrove.
Yeah.
The season before, I went to Coventry and he went to Crystal Palace.
That's right.
So, you know, you go back and you look at the journeys. Ian Taylor.
The pathways.
Yeah, you look at that, you know, and Ian Taylor was a teammate
at Villa
and playing in the reserves with me at Moor Green.
Yeah.
You know, and we both got into the first team together and then he, 6 months afterwards, he went to Port Vale. 6 months before, I went to Coventry. So, but yeah, I mean, the Blues, and I run the Coventry team as well.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
How come we've never played you? A bit nervous, are you?
Yeah, no, well, we're undefeated like yourself. So, you know what it's like, though. It's the way it's when your young players come in. So at the moment, we've got Carts and guards.
Lee Carsley.
Yeah. Whereas the Coventry team, we've got a couple of dual players with like Dealey, Carsley, McSheffrey. Yeah. So who are they going to play for? I think it's best that we don't meet.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. Yeah. Just final question. And do you ever have moments? Do you ever think, what if?
No.
Never.
Shit. Life goes on. Shit happens. Get on with it.
Been brilliant talking to you, mate. I was hoping to do this for half an hour. It's been an hour. It's been amazing. Thanks very much indeed. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Tom.